As consumers, we've probably never been more interested than we are today in where our food comes from and how it's produced. And then there's the matter of an expanding world population, challenging resources and the environment. I'm talking about it all with Dr. Nancy Cox, Dean of the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture, Food, and Environment. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Cox.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Let's start with that increasingly aware and demanding consumer culture. How is agriculture responding to expectations of all kinds of information about food, where it comes from, how it's grown, how it's fed, perhaps harvested, and so forth?
Yes, as you mentioned, consumers are very interested in all aspects of the healthfulness of food. If it's derived from an animal, was the animal handled well, sustainably and humanely? And there's all kinds of interest. And with all the interest comes some challenges sometimes to the scientists, because some of the perceptions are not borne out by scientists and by science. But the consumer is also always right. So the food industry that's connected to the university and scientific community has a lot of challenges in explaining what is an advantage to their foodstuffs and what is healthy and what's not proven to be healthy. But it really makes for some interesting scenarios. But ultimately, the consumer has to purchase the product. And so it is a challenge to the food industry and the scientists behind that to craft the best message we can possibly craft about the healthfulness and safety of food.
Would you say that agriculture farmers have gotten the message?
I would say in general that farmers have well gotten the message about consumer preferences. Sometimes it's hard to keep up with the information required by a consumer. There are all kinds of new labeling techniques now and tracing technologies such that a consumer can know what farm their foodstuff came from. And the farmers that are kind of on the leading edge are providing that service, are providing that identity, that local flavor. We have seen so many more local farmers producing food for grocery stores and institutions within Kentucky. There's been a huge local food movement associated with that.
Well, you know, it's very easy for us on the consuming end to be armchair critics, if you will, and make our demands of farming and agriculture. But on the other end, responding to those demands and those expectations can be very difficult if you're trying to make a living. Is science, innovation, technology bringing agriculture to a point where that conundrum might be solved?
Yes, I think that the more information available to both the farmer end, on the consumer end, on both of those ends helps. The consumer, as I said earlier, can find out where the animal was produced, where the lettuce was produced, and by whom. The farmer can get more and more sophisticated information about how to differentiate his or her product for that consumer and find that market. And we're talking right now about kind of a local food market that really caters to the individual needs of a very highly sophisticated consumer. We also have, on the other end of that spectrum, facing the farmer is selling food for the world. And so there's a lot of things in between selling food for the world and differentiating a local niche product for one's own community.
And I want to get to that world population in just a minute, but to pick up on something you just said, data, information. Never before has so much data been available to the farmer. In fact, in many instances, it's almost too much. It's a deluge of data. And from that has sprung these entrepreneurial little companies that are in the business of analyzing that data for the farmer. But in the end, it must be making a big difference in the efficiency of food growing, of livestock production, and of food processing.
Absolutely. The availability of data and the relative inexpensiveness of getting that to the farmer, relatively speaking, really does offer a lot of opportunities to reduce the risk of farming, for one thing, because if you can predict soil moisture, if you can maintain information on where in your pasture or your crop field is the best soil and what needs more nutrients, you can really get efficiencies of production. You also have so many sensors now, you would call it the Internet of Things, that you can sense soil moisture. You can have an irrigation system that only irrigates if the soil moisture goes beyond a certain point. So you can be a lot more efficient. Likewise, you can analyze consumer preferences and what's the next big thing on that end of the information as well. So both sensing agronomic needs as well as interpreting consumer behavior all are afforded improvements because of the data that's available to us, even on our phones.
You know, I was going to save this question for last, but I'm just going to fast forward right to it. Are those kinds of things creating a new kind of graduate from your college?
Certainly, the graduate who is going to go into any aspect of food production or food processing or food manufacturing has to be a quick study in terms of information, the kinds of information and analysis and, as we said before, big data that are available to them to use. And so we try to produce a very flexible graduate who is not intimidated by the world of big data. I don't think we would expect our students to understand everything about producing all the information they get, but we sure do want them to be able to use the information.
Okay, let's talk about sustainability, also another big consumer demand of agriculture. Finding non-polluting alternatives, that's a big consideration. And there seems to be widespread agreement that food production must increase substantially while at the same time minimizing environmental impact. Sounds like a pretty tall order.
It is a tall order. And you think about we're producing more food on less land than, say, 100 or 150 years ago. 150 years ago, a farmer fed his own family, his or her own family. Today, 155 humans are fed by each farmer or more in this country. And as you mentioned, the sustainability and environmental quality, wildlife habitat is also a consideration. So farming practices have greatly improved over the last few years, or last decades, due to agricultural research, such that we can minimize the fertilizer needed for optimum plant growth. We can protect the streams and water sources from runoff of fertilizer or pesticides. If we have cattle now out in pastures, we can fence them off from the streams. So while agricultural productivity has greatly increased, we have also been paying much more attention to the environment along the way.
Another major concern among consumers is GMO, genetically modified organisms. Can you touch on this and tell us where the science stands today?
Certainly. The concept of genetically modified organisms first came about when genes were inserted into plants for a certain characteristic. One of the most famous ones of those is Roundup Ready soybeans. A gene would be inserted into the soybeans that would make them resistant to Roundup. So you could spray those soybeans with Roundup and it would kill all the weeds and preserve the soybeans. It was a great agronomic production practice. It made you use less herbicide because you could control the weeds better. That said, consumers had a very negative reaction to the concept of altering the genes in an organism that they were going to eat or that animals were going to eat. And the technology has generally been proven to be very safe in terms of that genetically modifying plants. But yet the consumer, it's a big chasm for the consumer to understand that the way scientists do. And the whole GMO story has been a lesson in the divide between the scientific community and the consumer. And I think it taught the scientific community and the food production community a big lesson about not developing technologies that were unacceptable to consumers. Of course, not all consumers are opposed to GMOs. Not all consumers who are opposed to GMOs probably knows exactly what they are either. But it's been a real lesson. Now we have gene technologies such that we don't really just insert a new gene into a plant. We cause that plant to change its own genes to make a different characteristic. And there's a technology called CRISPR technology, in which it's not GMO anymore, but we're still altering the genes. So how are the consumers reacting to that? So far, a lot better indication, but it's not that different from the original GMO technology. And the original GMO technology was not that different from the way we've always done plant breeding. The tomato started out as something that looked like a golf ball. And over many generations of improving the tomato characteristics, we've got the modern tomato. That takes a long time and a lot of generations. Altering a tomato's gene with GMO technology would take one generation, but it's all about changing the genes. It's all about changing the genes, which in turn affect that ripe, tasty tomato or the certain kind of sweet corn or whatever the food may be.
That CRISPR technology is amazing.
It is amazing.
Is the management of food waste a topic that gets attention at UK Ag?
In the College of Ag, Food, and Environment at UK, food waste is very important. Up to 30% of food is typically wasted in this country. That is food that could be going to the nourishment of someone that is just that doesn't get used. Several different aspects of this are practiced within our college. One is that we have a campus kitchen, which is a national organization of students who want to affiliate and reduce food waste. The campus kitchen at UK has about 400 or 500 students that volunteer to repackage dining hall and other kinds of food. It really makes a difference to reduce food waste. As we talk about developing new technologies to produce food better, we also just need the old block and tackle technology of let's not waste the food.
Nutrient enrichment of plants and food animals, if you will, on the farm level, in the interest of developing functional foods, they're called, is a very big thing. One that comes to mind might be DHA-enriched eggs. We're a very DHA-deficient society here in this country, so it could really make a big difference in our health. Is that also a science that that you all are looking at?
We are looking at the idea of making functional foods or either altering the food stuff or adding components into the food stuff. It's hard to do the science on many of these types of foods because they're so hard to control in the diet. So if you eat the DHA eggs and somebody else doesn't, what other vitamins are you taking? What other things are you taking that also might interact with or either mask or enhance effects of the particular functional food? So it's worthy research to do. It's hard to do in practice with humans. It's easier to do in laboratory animals. And certainly DHA does have positive effects on memory, especially in developing young animals. So that science is... The science of nutraceuticals is a worthy science to pursue. It's difficult to pursue, but still worth thinking about.
I only have just a little bit of time, and I'm going to end on an enormous subject. No pressure. But how do these projections of world population growth, which are kind of scary, we're looking at going from where we are now, roughly 7, 8 billion, to something like well over 11, close to 12 billion by 2050. How do those projections play into what future agricultural professionals are going to have to know?
Well, certainly it is a daunting challenge as we see farmland generally decrease over the world rather than increase due to population growth. And at the same time, to be able to produce enough food for that growing population, we are dependent on a lot of research to figure out that drought-resistant plant or that super efficient goat or cow or fish. And the progress of research we have depended on the progress of research to get where we are today. actually the growth in research productivity or the growth in agricultural production as the result of research is slacking off. We are not funding our research as much as we used to. China is about double the United States in investment in agricultural research, which is encouraging if you're thinking about the worldwide population. But it is daunting to think about the U.S. not being the major innovator in agricultural production and not being the major funder of agricultural research. That said, the productivity that we've experienced in the last 150 years should continue at some rate, and we should be able to figure out solutions for the world's population. But it's not an easy task, and it is daunting to think about 2050 and the 10 million or 11 million, a billion, 10 billion or 11 billion people in the world.
Dr. Nancy Cox, Dean of the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture, Food, and Environment. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast is produced in the studios of Dynamics Productions, an audio recording and sound design facility in Lexington. On the web at dxaudio.com. Dynamics Productions. We listen.